You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
SMS Eusebius on 31702 or 31567.
8 minutes before 11, let's now talk a little bit about this case that happened last week in which Judge Davis said that the right to privacy includes your right to smoke a little bit of dacha in your home. No one should be bothering you. I wonder what you make of that. Give us a call right now on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. I think it's a cool judgment, to be honest. The state must stay out of my house. And frankly, if I want to harm myself, and it's not even clear on the evidence that the harm is the kind of harm where the state must rush over to stop me from doing something horrendous, then why are we not already decriminalizing the social use of marijuana? I just don't see it. I think it's very cool. I mean, you know, we're all so anxious. Jacob Zuma is stuffing up the country. The ANC is dithering about whether to have organizational renewal. The commies can't decide whether they have the proverbial balls to just leave cabinet. You have Helen Ziller trolling us with colonialism tweet. Everybody deserves to get stoned as a little bit of escapism from the hot mess that we are in. So I welcome this judgment. Dennis, you did well, my friend. Excellent judgment on the bench, was progressive, and I think it's really, really cool. So let's debate the Dacha judgment. 011-883-0702. Call me right now in Johannesburg. Light up. Provided you're at home, you could still be arrested, but we'll tell you in a second what defense you have. And in Cape Town, give us a call on 021-446-0567. Joining me is Aneen Krichler, who's a PhD student at UCT, at the Center of Criminology, and they were friends of the court and friends of Dacha from Cape Town. How's it, Aneen?
Hi,
Eusebius.
It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. Don't know why you're so nervous. You guys were cited very favorably by Judge Dennis Davis. I have to start off just on a sort of nerdish legal note. I thought, you know, Judge Davis, and you may or may not comment on this, I know you lawyerly types like to strictly keep within what the law says, but I read the judgment this morning and I had a bit of a chuckle because basically Judge Davis is quite clear if you read between the lines. And he says, the Dacha Party's case was really, really weak. The Prince dude was marginally better, but this is so important to me. He's a socialist, but he's relied on liberal philosophers that I'm going to ask the brilliant brains of UCT and the Cape Bar to come and make the best possible argument for this case.
Yeah, I think you see, because that is exactly what happened. He wanted this case to have its best shot at winning that it could. So really went out of his way to interpret it as coherently and as well as he could and gave it a good hearing.
Yeah, which is just as well, because it is, as he said, by way of justifying doing so, that it is socially important. Now, there are many elements to this. Tell the public which element of this you guys were asked to be friends of the courts on as a thought partner.
Right. So the capacity in which we did our affidavit as friend of the court was from a criminological perspective. So we didn't really comment on the legal position or even international legal position or the medical position, but we were really looking at what should good drug policy do and what are other countries doing in terms of their cannabis policy and how can that inform our thinking in South Africa on those issues.
And what did you find in terms of international comparative law?
So one important thing that I think is perhaps also worth pointing out is that this case is happening at a very different time from the previous challenge to cannabis prohibition that Prince raised in the Constitutional Court. The world has changed. A whole lot more countries are asking these questions and are coming to different conclusions than they did 10, 15 years ago. And I think really what Judge Davis did brilliantly is get to the point of this matter, which is not whether cannabis causes harm. Because I think the mistake that the state made in this case is they really tried to present cannabis as causing catastrophic harm. And some of that is substantiated, for example, the impact on driving capacity. And some of what they said was selective or really not substantiated. And on the other hand, part of Acton's case is that cannabis causes no harm at all and, in fact, will heal everything in our society. And I don't think that's justifiable either. But the point is not whether it does cause harm. It almost certainly does. So does alcohol. So does tobacco. So do most fun things in life.
Yeah.
The question is, what is the proportionate and appropriate and minimally invasive way to address those harms? And I think the international evidence is increasingly that the police and the courts and the prisons are not the most appropriate and effective way of dealing with the harms of cannabis.
So even if there was serious harm, which the state didn't prove in this case, even in that scenario, Judge Davis would have said, however, criminalizing is disproportionate to how to deal with serious harm, notwithstanding the fact that it wasn't proven anyway.
Absolutely. What the state had to do was not just prove that there is a harm here that they have some interest in trying to control,
yes,
but that the criminal law is the minimum necessary way to deal with these harms. And the international evidence and consensus is increasingly, it is not. It is not proportionate. It is not effective. So it was a very hard case for them to try to make, and I think they didn't even try, actually.
Yeah, because as I read the case, I thought to myself, I wonder what the prospects on appeal are, given that Judge Davis is saying, listen, the state here really just brought us basically a GP and then some tunny who's a pharmacist, but they're not really experts on the hectic medical debate about the psychotic and other consequences allegedly of smoking dacha, as well as whether it genuinely is a gateway and what have you. Then I thought to myself, I wonder whether that means better quality evidence on appeal would work. But then he slam dunks it, doesn't it, in the judgment by saying, listen, preemptively, even if they do that, harm reduction still means that criminalization is a bad medical response anyway.
Yeah, I think that is what an increasing number of countries are finding. We'll see what happens on appeal. And, of course, there's another court case that is going to be heard end of July and August up in the Gauteng High Court with the Dacha couple, which is dealing with similar issues.
Yeah.
And we'll also have to see what that court comes up with.
Just a final question. I know you didn't want to get into the substantive legal issues, but they are tied up in the criminology work that you guys did as a friend of the court. So just your opinion for what it's worth. I thought it was really cool and interesting, but also wondered what other human rights-oriented lawyers will think of the case, that he pinned it to the right to privacy centrally.
Yes, absolutely. And I think he also had to find that quite carefully in the legal argument. Yes, so a number of, as he points out in the judgment, a number of international courts, other courts internationally, have explored the issue of drug use as a right to privacy issue, and it is very interesting, yeah.
Beautiful stuff. Anine, thank you so much. What's your PhD on, by the way?
Oh, no, we'll never ask that.
All the best. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
5 minutes after 11, we continue our discussion of the Dacha case, and basically what the court had decided in the Western Cape is that the right to privacy is very important. It is also linked in turn when you try and animate it, in the language of Judge Davis. It is linked to your autonomy, to your dignity, and a little bit of pot. The harm is not so great that it justifies the kind of state resources that is usually expended on stopping you and me from smoking in our homes. And he has given this government 2 years to make sure that it amends all the different parts of the law that prevent you and me from doing so lawfully right now. So it wasn't legalized, but it is an important step towards decriminalization. I think it's excellent. I can't think of a better respite from Planet Zuma then lighting up a Zol. 021-446-0567. Have your say in Cape Town and in Johannesburg on 011-883-0702. Richard, good morning.
Morning, Eusebius. Good morning. Was this Camilla from Cape Town who was on just before the news?
It was Anine, a criminologist, a PhD student.
Oh, I see. I thought it was somebody I knew. No. I'd like to make one comment. I'm in natural health and I use cannabis quite successfully for a number of ailments. The two main strains of the plant are indica and sativa. Indica, mainly used for medicinal purposes, has been used for thousands of years. And if you consider that the best-selling model of Tata, the small little runabout, is called Indica. How's that?
Okay, that's interesting.
Very interesting. Tata, who bought Land Rover and Jaguar, they're calling their best-selling model Indica, and Indica has been used for thousands of years. And of course, cannabis can be harmful, like tobacco and other drugs. But then you can kill yourself with 20 Panados, if you like.
Yeah, there's lots of inconsistencies, and it is also addressed in this judgment as well, Richard, that when we compare it, for example, to substance abuse, when it comes to alcohol, when it comes to cigarettes, this day and age, we can also add sugar and other things, that the state does not exactly criminalize our drinking to the same extent. You are regulated, rather. You can have a certain amount, and under certain conditions, you can't, for example, drive while under the influence, but it's perfectly legal to have a six-pack at home. And that kind of inconsistency is obviously doesn't make sense from a policy point of view. Larry, good morning.
How are you doing, Mr. Smith?
I'm good, thanks, Larry.
Good. My comment is regarding your topic, Dakar. I think it actually gives the police a forum to do more work and then just wait for us to go and buy our Zol, you know, if that's the correct word to use, Zol. There was a time, I remember, when drinking in public was also illegal, and then all the police done was to wait for people to buy a beer, pop open a beer, and then arrest him.
Yeah, that's so exactly right.
Same thing with the weed. They've done the exact same thing. Prior to the judgment, if one had to go to court on a Monday morning, most of the guys that got arrested was arrested for weed.
100%. And it still goes on. This judgment, in fact, has a citation of exactly the volumes of arrest in relation to drug-related offenses. And for example, Larry, in 2014, 2015, a quarter of a million arrests have been made just based on drugs, most of which is because people had in their possession or were smoking dacha. Now, if you free up those resources, maybe you can start finding the Guptas when they do wrong instead. Joining us on the line is programming executive at Soul City Institute, Dr. Sue Goldstein. Sue, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
A lot of people will say that they have anecdotal examples of how the use of marijuana can lead to addiction. It can be a gateway to other drugs, and that's quite apart from tearing families apart. Now, what's interesting in this particular case is that the state wasn't very good at giving expert evidence for that view. But I know a lot of my listeners think that that is the case. Assuming that is true, is criminalization the appropriate response at any rate, or are there better ways of intervening?
So thanks for that question. Well, I think that the point about criminalization of any substance use, including heroin and tuk and the OP, is that, okay, it's not a good thing for people to do, but if you criminalize the users and not the people who are doing the dealing, then you end up with a huge problem, and you end up with a lot of really sad, desperate people on the streets who are not really criminals. I mean, they're just really sad addicts. And it was a very, very interesting illustration when the DSD mistakenly invited a whole lot of people to come to rehab. And the young people flocked because they are desperate. So the latest thinking around substance abuse is that you don't criminalize it and you have programs that reduce harm. So trying to get people into health services, trying to get people into support, trying to make sure that they're these people who prey on addicts, who's doing the selling and making the money, are not able to do that.
Absolutely. And you think the state is doing enough to take harm reduction seriously? What is the level of partnership with outfits like your own, Sue, and just on its own mandate? Is there more the state ought to be doing rather than just viewing the addict as a criminal, as a social nuisance, as antisocial?
I think there are different parts of the state that approach it differently. So the Department of Health and the Department of Social Development would look at harm reduction, and we, in fact, are partnering with Gauteng Department of Social Development, looking at substance abuse. But the other parts of the state are less interested, and like the SAPs, and they want to really get the criminals, if you like.
Mm.
So it's complicated, and the state, in my view, doesn't tend to speak to each other.
Mm.
So, even when there is a kind of interministerial committee, they don't tend necessarily to agree with each other.
Mm.
So this can cause a problem. But I think that there are some very people who are really working very hard within some of the departments to try and decriminalize.
Absolutely. Sue, well, we love
group of people who are against decriminalization are often the sort of very religious groups who kind of see this as the devil. You know, it's such a terrible thing.
That is true. And actually, Judge Davis does very well because he also does a survey of the history of the different social and anthropological accounts of the use of cannabis in this country. And it's not just the religious element. I mean, there's also, I was shocked. It's amazing how race never is far from any analysis in South Africa. So how also, you know, going back to 1812, there was the first formal criminalization of the use of dacha, despite the fact that many groups in South Africa, many different ethnic groups, have used it for various purposes. So there is a kind of moral hazard associated with it, despite the fact that we can't justify differences with other substances.
Exactly. And I mean, if you want to look at another substance, alcohol is by far more harm in our country than dacha does. Mm. I mean, people driving under the influence, gender-based violence, ordinary violence, it's just huge. And we just don't look, if alcohol was introduced today, it would definitely be banned.
Mm.
But we don't treat it in the same way, and yet the harm is really, really great.
Absolutely. Sue, you've been great. We love the work that Soul City Institute does. Thank you for sparing us some of your time. I know you're very busy.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Cheers. There was Dr. Sue Goldstein, Programming Executive at Soul City Institute. Do you agree with her that the best way to deal at any rate, firstly, we can't make policy for minority of people. Most people who want to use dacha privately in small amounts, that's fine. But even if we were to be a deeply caring state, which we should be, and intervene when people who are prone to addiction become addicts, is the best way to intervene by criminalizing the addict or actually having harm reduction programs? And I think that's the way to go. I think that really is the way to go, and to recognize that an addictive propensity is precisely a psychological condition that needs to be dealt with caringly rather than criminalizing someone. 021-446-0567. Give us a call in Cape Town. And in Johannesburg, let's debate the issue on 011-883-0702. We'll be back right after this. 17 minutes after 11, everybody must get stoned or not. We are discussing and debating the Davis judgment that said that the right to privacy means that small amounts of marijuana in your home, you should be allowed to light up, in fact, and the state should not be, it's not its business to be interfering with you. And if you did have a problem, then it should really be looking towards decriminalization at any rate as a more appropriate public health response to those small group of people who are addicts and not capable of using it casually. Do you agree with that? Anne in Centurion, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. Listen, I'm not going to hold up anybody's time, but my problem is, I don't know if you remember that chap by the name of Yusuf. He was against anti-smoking, right? And anti-smoking, don't smoke near children, don't do this. And he started to put labels on the smoking packets and what. Now, my problem is with, if you smoke dacha in your own home, right, you've got children. What happens if a youngster falls pregnant? What about that baby? You've got alcoholic syndrome babies at the moment. You've got this. Aren't you infecting their lungs? Secondhand smoke, dacha smoke. Aren't you affecting their lungs and their health? And where does it end? I mean, it boggles my mind.
What's your view, Anne, of what is your view of parents who smoke in front of their kids at home? Should we lock them up?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I don't say lock them up. You know what I mean? You either don't smoke, you try and give it up. Otherwise, you go far, far, far away from these children. There are a lot of parents out there that don't consider their children. They couldn't care about their children.
Mm.
You know, they're not worried. But now, to me, these people that are lobbying for the smoking, the fact remains is what I think is, I've listened to all these professors now, Helen Rees and all of them, for now days and weeks on 702, right? They are so highly qualified in the medical field. Now, I want to know where all of these people that are lobbying for it, like living with her partner and blah, 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 and all that jazz. Where are they so highly? Where are all the coming from, their degrees coming from?
But here's the thing, Anne, here's the thing. I hear what you're saying, and I'm totally with you, 200% in terms of how these professors can sometimes respond. But sometimes these researchers do have an important role that you and I around the braai must consider, which is this. Sometimes you and I reason just based on our personal experience. It doesn't mean that our personal experience is how the world actually works overall. So, for example, one of the things these clever professors have told us when they were asked by Judge Davis to provide research rather than just personal experience is that they looked at the research and they found that in those countries where Dhaka has been decriminalized, there hasn't, for example, been a spike in crime, and also that there's no indication that if you continue to criminalize it, that the people who are currently smoking in front of their kids will suddenly be scared to smoke in front of their kids. So there's no link between whether it's criminal or not, and whether or not mom or dad will be a responsible mom or dad.
Now, all these, and one more thing is, all, when you go and buy, what do they call these things? And look, I'm an old duck, eh? When they start advertising Zorts, how's it going to be packaged, and is it going to have the same wording on danger, smoking causes cancer, don't smoke near children, don't smoke...
It's a very good question.
How are they going to do that?
Maybe it should say, Anne, maybe it's going to say, warning, you may live happily ever after not thinking about Zuma.
Oh, well, here's another subject. I'm not...
Andrew in Santon. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, this is Tobias.
Jeez, dude, are you so high that you have a huge grammatical pause before you answer?
Not until tonight.
You have to be home. It's a very narrow judgment.
Yes. A couple of questions. I'll ask them as quickly as I can. First thing is it now legal? Can I go and plant a plant in my garden, and can I smoke it in my garden?
Okay, so this is what you can do, Andrew. Yeah. This is exactly what you can do according to the judgment.
Right.
Davis says to the government, I think it's unconstitutional to stop Andrew from planting and smoking at home in Sandton. However, I know how legislation works. I give you 2 years to make the necessary changes. And in the meantime, it will remain illegal. I'm paraphrasing you.
Okay.
However, if Andrew smokes during that two-year period and the police barges into his home, I also add that Andrew is allowed to use as a defense if he's brought before a court, I was doing so in my home in small doses.
Okay. I also believe that that's the same situation if you're caught driving it in your car. You can claim privacy as a defense, from what I can tell from the judgment. I'm not sure
that's
if that's
a, that's
or
a right. Stunning question. And to be honest, Judge Davis doesn't address that.
Okay.
I don't know whether the law would interpret the car as the equivalent of a home. It's a really good question. I think he had in mind the physical home.
Right. All right. So the last question is, are they then going to let everyone that's been caught for possession out of jail?
I can't answer that question. I'm not sure.
All right. Maybe someone can.
Yeah. Good question. Thanks, Andrew.
Okay.
Have you ever been high?
Many, many times.
Opening the doors of perception, I tell you. Let's go to Blackari. How's it, John?
Hello, Eusebius. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, sir. Go ahead.
Just to preface my comment, in case my adult children or any of my clients are listening to this, by the way, I'm a social worker, is that what I'm going to say does not mean that I approve of them smoking, but yes. I do welcome this judgment because it puts the onus and the responsibility on clever people like Eusebius and everyone else to educate society about the damaging effects that, addictions and all the rest happen. And it's really about, I like to make a conceptual distinction between the state and society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the state has been captured. The state might go into collapse and fail, but society will continue. And I mean, if you look back in history, it's always interesting to see how, just when things look so bad and you're looking into the so-called dark ages, they weren't really that dark because there were actually things happening in society. And I think now in the 21st century, with South Africa today, where we have a state which is really in a state of decline, that it's now for us in society to wake up and take responsibility for what all range of issues that the state has simply shown itself incapable and incompetent of dealing with, so that we can make sure our children have a future.
Stunning. Thank you so much, John. Bruce in Randburg, hello.
Hey, how's it, Eusebius?
Lekker.
Listen, please, you got to help me. I know you're very good at your definitions. I mean, you're the only person I know who's ever used the word discombobulate on the radio.
Isn't it a really cool word, though?
Yeah, no, but no one's supposed to know that word. And I remember you used it. I thought to myself, because you always say English isn't your first language. I know you read a lot, but it's one of those words where I noticed it. I thought, that's brilliant. Listen, I don't know where I fit into this whole discussion. I don't smoke. I believe in the legalization of cannabis, and I have for a long time. But I don't smoke for medicinal reasons or for health. I just enjoy the effect.
Yeah.
Where does that put me in?
Bruce. This is what is so stunning about Judge Davis's judgment, is that he's finally saying, listen, yes, there is some evidence that marijuana can alleviate symptoms of certain conditions. But can we stop pretending that people who are healthy like Bruce shouldn't be allowed to fly like a kite as well?
You know, in America, it's quite interesting. I do a lot of work there, and they obviously started legalizing in the States.
Yeah.
Colorado was the first state. You know, the first year, $300 million they made in tax. Okay, $300 million. But now the federal government doesn't allow, because it's still technically illegal. So all the cannabis shops, they have to keep the money out of the banks. But, you know, it's changed the food culture. Like, all the restaurants now cater for the stoner crowd. And, you know, when you like the stoner crowd, like sweet and savory. So it's actually created a whole new kind of food culture in Colorado. And there's probably about 14 states for medicinal reasons.
That's right. And all of that is cited by Judge Davis. I think it's going to be very hard for the state to win this on appeal. Just a quick question before I let you go, Bruce. When you have the munchies, what is your favorite junk? Oh,
no, I'm so good at making snacks. Quick, efficient, cheese, bacon. I love my cooking. And I'm really good at tasty snacks, but like, not complicated, cheese, like bacon. No, that's my thing, snacks.
Okay. Cool beans. Thanks, Bert. Thanks for calling in, eh? Let's take a quick break there. It's getting lit.